कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवरदारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य श्री हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य श्री हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय Nitai Gaura Premanande, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम 10 टू 11 चैप्टर 21 एंटाइटल्ड एक्सप्लेनेशन ऑफ द वैदिक पाथ टेक्स्ट नंबर 7
देश कालादि भावाना वस्तूनां मम सत्तम गुणदोषौ विधीयेते नियमार्थं हि कर्मणा देश कालादि भावाना वस्तूनां मम सत्तम गुणदोषौ विधीयेते नियमार्थं हि कर्मणा देश कालादि भावाना वस्तूनां मम सत्तम गुणदोषौ विधीयेते नियमार्थं हि कर्मणा देशकालादिभावाना वस्तूनां मम सत्तम गुणदोषो विधीयेते नियमार्थं हि कर्मणा देशकालादिभावानां वस्तूनां मम सत्तम गुणदोषौ विधीयेते नियमार्थं हि कर्मणाम्।
माताजी
देशकालादिभावानां वस्तूनां मम सत्तम देशकालादिभावानां वस्तूनां मम सत्तम नियमार्थं हि कर्मणा।
वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशंस। देश ऑफ स्पेस, काल टाइम, आदि एंड सो ऑन, भावानाम ऑफ सच स्टेट्स ऑफ एग्जिस्टेंस, वस्तूनाम ऑफ थिंग्स, मम बाय मी, सत्तम वो मोस्ट सेंटली उद्धव, गुणदोषौ पायटी एंड सिन, विधीयेते
आर एस्टैब्लिश्ड, नियमार्थम फॉर द रेस्ट्रिक्शन ही सर्टेनली कर्मणाम ऑफ फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटीज। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय द डिसिपल्स ऑफ हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन वो सेंटली उद्धव, इन ऑर्डर टू रेस्ट्रिक्ट मेटीरियलिस्टिक एक्टिविटीज आई हैव एस्टैब्लिश्ड दैट विच इज प्रॉपर एंड इम्प्रॉपर अमंग ऑल मेटीरियल थिंग्स इंक्लूडिंग टाइम स्पेस एंड ऑल फिजिकल ऑब्जेक्ट्स। परपोर्ट, द वर्ड नियमार्थम इन ऑर्डर टू रेस्ट्रिक्ट इज सिग्निफिकेंट इन दिस वर्स। A conditioned soul falsely identifies with his material senses and thus considers anything giving immediate satisfaction to the body to be good and anything inconvenient or disturbing to be bad. By higher intelligence, however, one recognizes long-term self-interest and danger. For example, medicine may be immediately bitter, but by calculating one's long-term interest, one accepts the bitter medicine to cure a disease that is not immediately troublesome, but ultimately fatal. Similarly, Vedic literature restricts the sinful propensities of human beings by establishing what is proper and what is improper, among all the objects and activities of the material world. Because everyone must eat, the Vedas prescribe foods in the mode of goodness and not those which are sinful, such as meat, fish and eggs. Similarly, one is advised to live in a peaceful and pious community and not in association with the sinful persons, nor in an unclean or turbulent environment. By designating and restricting the exploitation of the material world, Vedic knowledge gradually brings a conditioned soul to the platform of material goodness. At that stage, one becomes eligible to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter the transcendental stage of life. It should be remembered that such mere eligibility does not constitute actual qualification. Without Krishna consciousness, mere mundane piety can never qualify a conditioned soul to go back home, back to Godhead. Within this world, we are all infected by the false pride, which must be diminished through submission to the Vedic injunctions. One who is completely engaged in the loving service of the Lord need not adopt these preliminary methods, for he directly contacts the personality of Godhead through the spontaneous process of surrender. In the previous verse, the Lord explained why Vedic literatures assign different values to the bodies of different living entities. And here the Lord explains the Vedic value system in regard to the material objects that interact with these bodies.
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामय्यं तदाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणारघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
रीडिंग द 11th कैंटो 21st चैप्टर Krishna is giving an explanation of the Vedic path in this particular verse. Last week, we were discussing Srimad Bhagavatam in a particular place. In the third canto, it's explained that the sages headed by Sanat Kumara in order to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they came all the way from Satya Loka to the place below Patala Loka, where Lord Sankarshan was residing. Reading this verse, we are discussing the point that how Satya Loka is the topmost planet in the universe, and Sankarshan is actually holding the whole planetary system, is residing below the Patal Loka. But all these sages, they came through the path of the Ganges. They traveled such a long distance to come and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So similarly, we are grateful to all of you that despite such heavy rains that in Bombay that you come to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and Lord Sankarshan, it was explained that Lord Sankarshan was very deeply absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. But he actually came out of his meditation just to actually speak Srimad Bhagavatam to these sages. So Lord Sankarshan was exhibiting how one's more than one's personal meditation or personal ecstasy in the Supreme Lord to serve others who came to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, or to serve others by speaking about the Lord's importance. So therefore he came out of his meditation. So with this beginning, we'll try to discuss this verse. So here in this particular chapter, just a background of this verse, that Krishna began this chapter by saying, in the Vedic literatures I have described three paths: the path of fruitive activities, the path of karma, and the path of Jnana Marga, trying to understand the absolute truth by philosophical analysis, and the path of Bhakti Marga. And he mentioned that those who do not follow any of these three paths, and those who simply cultivate insignificant sense gratification, they simply undergo the continuous cycle of birth and death. So he emphasized about the how one should follow at least one of the three paths. And then he mentioned that one should follow the path according to one's adhikara. For every path there is a particular eligibility or an adhikara. Just like even in this world there are, like, to join, if a person wants to learn some particular subject of knowledge, there is a particular entrance to join the particular college. According to a person's level, different subjects are taught. There is a basic mathematics, advanced mathematics, intermediate mathematics. So similarly, according to a person's adhikara, one should follow the path of karma, jnana or bhakti. And even within the individual paths of karma, jnana and bhakti, there are various stages, and one should understand one's level and eligibility with the help of oneself by proper introspection and also by the guidance of others, and then one should follow the sadhana according to that level. And then Krishna mentioned that in order to understand what is proper in life, one must evaluate a given object within its particular category. So, essentially Krishna is saying that one should distinguish between the good and bad. One should distinguish between what is dharma and what is adharma. What will actually, what is pious and what is sinful. So, in one's ordinary dealings, one must distinguish between good and bad. Like Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita also. Intelligence and mode of goodness is that a person knows what is dharma and what is adharma. What is to be done, what is not to be done. What is to be feared and what is not to be feared. And then he said that in this way one must distinguish, in order to ensure one's physical survival, one must recognize that which is auspicious and that which is inauspicious. And then Krishna said that I have revealed in the Vedic literatures about these various principles of how to recognize what is good and what is bad. And then he said that, like, all the material bodies are made of this Pancha Mahabhuta. Earth, water, fire, air and ether. And in fact, right from the living entities in the Brahmaloka to the Patal Loka, all the bodies are made of Pancha Mahabhuta. Maybe in some bodies, subtle elements are more prominent. In the Brahmaloka, one's body is predominantly made of intelligence. But all the bodies are made up of matter. And all these elements, whether the gross elements or the subtle elements, they emanate from the Supreme Lord. They emanate from me. And then in the previous verse, Krishna mentioned that although all the bodies are made up of matter, but still the Vedic literatures give different names to different bodies. From one point of view, all the bodies are made up of matter, but still the Vedic literatures give different designations to different bodies in terms of the one's varna and ashrama, one's position in the social order and the spiritual order. Brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya and shudra. And why these designations are given? So that the living entities may achieve their goal of life. And then coming to this particular verse, now Krishna says that niyamartam hi karmanam. So not only various designations are given to the different bodies, although all the bodies are made up of matter essentially, Pancha Mahabhuta and the subtle elements. And then now Krishna says that, and I have also established what is proper and what is improper according to the time, according to the place, according to the particular object, and according to a person in his situation within the Varnashram system. I have discussed all these things, what is proper and improper, based on all these various categories, and we will find in the next verse number 8 to 15, Krishna will describe that in detail. Krishna will say that what is the proper place for performing yajna, what is the improper place, and what is the proper time, and what is an improper time. He will describe about the purity and impurity of the different objects. So he will describe in the various verses coming, this verse is like a prelude to the next 8 verses where he will describe the subject. And one of the main thing which is here, speaking here, is that what is the purpose of actually discussing this, discussing the subject of what is proper and improper based on time, place and circumstance. The purpose is that niyamartam hi karmanam. That means in order to restrict one's materialistic activities, in order to restrict one's enjoying propensity. And this particular word is given a great emphasis in the particular, in the purport. In the purport, Hridayan Maharaj, the disciple of Srila Prabhupada, mentioned that the discussion of what is proper and improper in regards to time, place and circumstance, one of the purpose of this discussion is that a person comes to the stage of sattva guna. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving a very detailed analysis of the different things in the 3 modes. In fact, that whole section,
17th chapter, 18th chapter, and the 14th chapter, where Krishna discusses about the three modes. So the entire subject matter is about the lifestyle, and the purpose of the entire discussion, when Krishna concludes in the, I think, 18th chapter, 40th or 41st verse, he says that natat asti prithivyamva divi deveshu va punaha sattvam prakritijair muktam yadebi sya tribir jagat. It means everything in this world, you can't find anything in this world which cannot be within the three modes. Any object, either in this planet or in the higher planet, everything can be classified within the three modes. And the purpose of the entire discussion is that a person should come to the mode of goodness. And that point is actually emphasized over here, that by designating and restricting the exploitation of the material world, Vedic knowledge gradually brings a living entity to the platform of Sattva Guna. And then it is mentioned that after coming to the Sattva Guna, coming to the Sattva Guna is like coming to the airport, but ultimately one has to catch the flight. So then one has to go beyond the Sattva Guna, one has to transcend the three modes, which Krishna will further emphasize in the later in the chapter. So we can see that the Vedic literatures, they give the gradual path of elevation, and they also give a direct path. The devotees have mentioned in the purport, the direct path is also taking to Bhakti Yoga. Of course, for practicing Bhakti Yoga, the lifestyle based on the mode of goodness, that will be conducive for practicing Bhakti Yoga in a stable way. So therefore, one is the goal. The goal is to transcend, to practice Bhakti Yoga, to develop love for the Lord. And the conducive lifestyle is actually the lifestyle based on the goodness. And we find here that Vedic literatures, they actually give a discussion of the various subjects of time, place and vastu based on the candidate, what is proper and what is improper. So one thing I want to discuss, how the Vedic literatures are like the mother. So when we talk about this analogy of the mother, Vedas are like the mother. One part of the analogy which we usually discuss is that, like, if you want to know the father, you have to ask the mother. Similarly, if you want to understand the Supreme Lord, you have to consult the Vedas. But another part of the analogy is that, yes, like a mother who has many children, she understands the capacity and the nature of each child, and accordingly takes care of the children. Some child may be allergic to a particular food. Some child's capacity may be to eat 5 chapatis. Some child may eat 3 chapatis. So according to the capacity and the preference and the nature, the mother actually takes care of the children. So similarly, Vedas, understanding the nature of the different living entities, Vedic literatures, they actually prescribe different rules and regulations. So one example we'll begin with. Narada Muni, when he is speaking to King Prachina Barishar, he mentions, Teerteshu Pratidrishteshu Raja Medyan Pashun Vane Yavadartam Alam Lubdo Hanyat Iti Niyamyate. He says that if a person is very greedy for eating meat, then one may kill animals which are suitable for sacrifice, but only on special occasions, and that too only in the forest, and only as much as necessary and not more. So Narada Muni mentions some 6 rules in this particular verse. If a person is very greedy for eating meat, yeah, one may eat meat by following these rules. He says that this is how the hunting is regulated in the Shastra. And then he mentions that ya evam karma niyatam vidvan kurvita manavah. Any learned person who acts according to the regulations is never contaminated by those actions which arises from knowledge. On the other hand, if a person performs unregulated actions, like this particular verse, Krishna is saying that niyamartham hi karmanam, in order to regulate the activities, in order to regulate the materialistic activities. So Narada Muni also mentions that if a person performs unregulated actions, mana rudo, he thinks himself to be the doer, and then he gets bound in the karmic cycle. And further, guna pravaha patito, he actually falls down in the flow of the 3 modes of nature. He falls under the influence of the 3 gunas. Nashta pragyo, he loses all the discrimination. And vrajati adaha, he sinks deep down into the material existence. So Narada Muni, in this particular verse, he is actually instructing King Prachina Parishad how the Vedas prescribe certain regulations for a person who is greedy for eating meat, and how one should follow those regulations. Like, in fact, Narada Muni, when we are speaking this, speaking to Prachina Parishad, because Prachina Parishad was performing animal sacrifices according to the Vedic injunctions, but he was performing so many animal sacrifices that some of the animals were not getting promoted to the higher species, like, as a human being. So Prachina Parishad was getting implicated in actually murdering those animals. So Narada Muni, he came to Prachina Parishad out of compassion towards the animals, and also out of compassion towards Prachina Parishad. Like, some, we find people, sometimes people are compassionate towards the animals, but they may be cruel towards the human beings, they may behave in a harsh manner. Or some people may be other way around, they may be good towards the human beings, they may not be compassionate towards the animals. But a Vaishnava's compassion is actually complete, in the sense that his compassion is towards the animals as well as the people who are killing the animals. So Narada Muni is giving this, like, instructions about the how to actually regulate the tendency. Even if a person is greedy for eating meat, there are certain regulations. And there is another verse in the Bhagavatam, when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, it is described that many prostitutes also came to welcome Krishna. And Prabhupada, actually, one may actually get the question, how can there be prostitutes in Dwaraka? Because in one class, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj mentioned, they were like firefighters. Like, many of the fire extinguishers were maybe there in different parts of the building, but they're practically unused. So Maharaj mentioned one class that so prostitutes were there in Dwaraka, but they were not used. But Prabhupada gives another point in the purport, which we'll take up in connection to this particular verse. He says that the prostitutes are necessary citizens for the proper upkeep of the society. Like, the government opens wine shops, but this does not mean that the government encourages the drinking of wine. The idea is that, like, there will be certain class of people who will do sinful activities at any cost. So if some facility is not provided for them, then they will actually disturb the the common society. They will contaminate the common society. They will that will lead to like a like smuggling and like illicit liquor and illicit sex. They will contaminate the good people within the society. So therefore, there will be certain people who are in the lower modes and who will do the sinful activities at any cost. So therefore, certain facilities were provided by the government without contaminating the common society, understanding the needs of certain people by, like, that is why Prabhupada mentioned that prostitutes are necessary citizens for the proper upkeep of the society. So it is better that prostitutes be available in the marketplace so that the sanctity of the society can be maintained. So, like, although the subject may be a little controversial, but I'll try to, like, essentially, there are two extremes. One extreme is that a person does not understand the needs of the certain people who are in the lower modes, and when we don't provide certain facilities for them, they will contaminate that common society. And another extreme is that you make available the different sense gratification objects are so freely available that people actually, the mass of people, they get contaminated. Like, for example, in regards to meat eating, like, Vedas prescribe certain regulations, but if we see the, when the Britishers came to India, they opened slaughterhouses in which the mass killing of animals can be accomplished in a matter of time. So previously also, some people were eating meat, but then they had to go through, they had to follow so many regulations. But then, in the advancement of Kali Yuga, that if we see all the sinful activities, they are so freely available that the common society get contaminated. So it is a fine balance that how we understand to provide the needs of certain people in the three modes, at the same time don't contaminate the common society. So in this particular point, like we find in the other places in the Bhagavatam also, when Narada Muni is describing the Varnashram system, after describing the different orders, he finally mentions that the Brahmanas, well conversant with Vedic knowledge, have given the verdict that in every age, the conduct of different sections of people according to the modes of nature, and when we follow those injunctions, it will be auspicious for them in this life and after death. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, like, for example, like, there are certain class of people called as Antyajas who are in the lower class, who are below the Shudras. Like, for them, certain, like, when they indulge in, say, drinking or illicit sex or something, that is not considered sinful. But for example, But if the other classes of people, when they indulge in that is considered sinful. So again, coming back to the analogy of Vedas are like the mother. Vedas are like the mother. Understanding the needs of certain people, certain things are actually, certain concessions are given, but that is not a recommendation of the Vedas. And those concessions are given in order to regulate their materialistic activities. Niyamartam hi karmanam. In order to regulate their materialistic activities. And then elevate them to the higher stage. And that is a key thing. Like, for example, like if a tiger kills an animal, that is not sinful. If the tiger kills a man, that is not sinful. But if a man kills another man, that is considered sinful. So in this way, that we have to understand one of the core principle of the Lord's creation, there is a diversity. There is a diversity according to the three modes, and based on that, in every yuga, in every place, based on a person's situation, different rules are given. And generally, one of the tendency of the human being is that a person demands the concessions which are given for certain other class of people, and a conditioned soul demands those concessions for himself when the concessions are not given for him. And another tendency is that one tries to impose certain regulations which is prescribed for him on others for whom those regulations are not meant for. Like, there are certain concessions for maybe people, Shudras or Antyajas, but the people in the higher class, when they demand those concessions, then that is actually a mistake. By that one will actually fall. And when a person imposes certain regulations which are prescribed for the higher class, when those higher class people actually impose on the other people, then that is also a fault. So therefore, like, for example, if we see the example of Lord Ram, like, Lord Ram followed the Ekapatni Vrata, but he did not impose that on the monkeys of Kishkindha. After killing Vali, Lord Ram told Sugriva to accept both Ruma and Tara, because he understands the nature of the monkeys and he did not impose that on them. So, in that way, we find that Krishna is explaining this Vedic path, where we will find that according to the different time and place and the person, different pure and impure things are actually recommended for the purpose of restricting their materialistic tendencies. And when we talk about this, like the subject, the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj mentions that generally a conditioned soul, he is concerned about immediate gratification. He doesn't think about the long-term self-interest. He doesn't think about the long-term danger. One of the tendency we find in the people in Kali Yuga, they just want instant gratification. Like, when we see the examples, you see the two examples in the Bhagavatam. One is the Hiranyakashipu. The example of Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to change the entire universal system. He wanted to send people who are dharmic to hellish people, hellish planets, and to the adharmic people to the heavenly planets. Like, he brought all the devatas under his control. And he changed the entire universal system. He was completely in the adharmic path. And he had such capacity to enjoy sense gratification in an unrestricted manner. But Narada Muni says that sa yittam nirjita kakub ekarad vishayan priyan yatopa josham bunjano natrupyat ajitendriya. He says that, like, some people, they have lot of desires to enjoy, but they may not have the resources and even the physical capacity to enjoy. And some people may have the physical capacity and resources, some people may have the physical capacity, but they may not have the resources. But in the case of Hiranyakashipu, like, he had the capacity and the resources, but although he could enjoy in an unrestricted manner, but still he was dissatisfied because his senses were uncontrolled. And that's why Krishna, even in the beginning of the Gita itself, he says that raga dvesha vimuktaisu vishayan indriyais charan atma vashyair videyatma prasadam adigachyati. One who follows the regulative principles of freedom, he attains my full mercy, prasadam adigachyati. And then prasade sarva dukkanam hani rasyopajayate. When a person attains the mercy of the Lord, he becomes free from the miseries, and then his intelligence becomes fixed in the higher subject matters. So here Hiranyakashipu, he was completely fixed in adharma, and he was trying to enjoy sense gratification in an adharmic way, but he was dissatisfied. On the other hand, we have the example of Yayati Maharaj. When at the time of the birth of Parikshit Maharaj, when the astrologers were talking about the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj, in one verse they mentioned that Yayatir Iva Dharmikaha. This child Parikshit will be a dharmic king like Yayati. And Prabhupada explains in the purport in detail how Yayati was such a dharmic king. He performed so many sacrifices. He went to heaven. So Yayati was a very dharmic king. But Yayati, he was also absorbed in sense gratification, but in a dharmic manner. And Bhagavatam explains in the story of Yayati Maharaj, like Yayati, when he was cursed by Shukracharya to lose his youth and to become an old man, and then he said that, "I have not yet fulfilled my desires, please do something so that I can regain my youth." And then Shukracharya said that, "Okay, you can exchange your old age with the youth of one of your sons." And then he shamelessly asked his sons, and finally the youngest son Puru agreed to actually exchange his youth with Yayati's old age. And Yayati, he enjoyed his youth after the exchange with the youth of his youngest son Puru for 1,000 years. And then after enjoying for 1,000 years, then still he was unable to be satisfied. But Yayati was a dharmic person, but he enjoyed sense gratification in a dharmic way, but still he was unable to be satisfied. So in one sense, and then Yayati Maharaj, he starts describing his own story to his wife Devayani by using an allegory of a he-goat and a she-goat. And then finally he gives his realizations. He says that a person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, food grains, gold, animals and women. Nothing can satisfy him. In fact, as supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire but instead increases it, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. So therefore one must voluntarily cease from material desires. So like that, Yayati Maharaj gives his profound realizations. So we find that one example of Hiranyakashipu and another example of Yayati, both tried to gratify their senses, but one in an adharmic way and another in a dharmic way. Both were dissatisfied, but in the case of Hiranyakashipu, he didn't actually come to some higher philosophical, come to some philosophical analysis. He didn't try to introspect about why I am dissatisfied. But in the case of Yayati Maharaj, at least he realized his dissatisfaction, and then ultimately he he tried to think about the higher goals of life, and then he perfected his life. So the one advantage the Vedas, when they are talking about this, and Krishna has explained this Vedic path, how the Vedas gradually elevate a person. So even when a person tries to enjoy in a dharmic way by following these Vedic injunctions, it is a gradual path, but one purport Prabhupada says, even in a gradual path one can get entangled, but there is a hope that ultimately a person can think about the higher prospects of life. One can come to the philosophical platform, one can think about the higher goals of life, and that is what we find in the the example of Ayati Maharaj. And we'll take two more examples from the Bhagavatam. When Lord Brahma was actually performing his service of creation, it is described that from the backside of Lord Brahma, some Rakshasas or Asuras came out. And when these Asuras came out, and these Asuras, they saw the twilight. And when they saw the twilight, they imagined the twilight to be a beautiful form of a woman. And then, in fact, there are various verses, elaborate verses, they start actually speaking about that form of a woman. They are actually, there is no woman over there, but they imagine the twilight to be the form of a woman, and they describe the in minutely about the different bodily parts of that imagined the woman, and then they start speaking to the twilight. That, can you please tell me who are you? What is your identity? Why have you come here? Whom do you actually belong to? And then they start. They were thinking that maybe this woman is actually playing with a ball. And then they are asking that, why are you playing with this ball? And in this way, they were actually speculating. So here we see that these demons, the Asuric tendencies, they were completely absorbed in the tendency to enjoy. That although there was no women there, but their mind was so much absorbed that they were imagining the twilight to be a woman. So this shows the depth of the materialistic consciousness, the height of materialistic consciousness or materialistic absorption, that even in the absence of the object of enjoyment, a person is thinking actually something, imagining the twilight to be the woman, and then they were talking about that. And then we see another example when Lord Brahma was describing the Vaikuntha planets. He says that Yat Sankulam Haripada Natimatra Drishtair Vaidurya Marakata Hema Mayair Vimanai Yesham Brihat Katitata Smitashobi Mukhya Krishnatmanam Naraja Adadur Utsmayadya. So here Lord Brahma is saying that there are in the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha planets, they travel in airplanes which are made of very precious jewels, like gold and silver and diamond and emerald. And not only that, they were surrounded by very beautiful women who were having very beautiful bodily features. And although they were in the intimate association of the beautiful women, Krishnatmanam na raja adadur utsmayadhyai, their mind was not stimulated by passion, because their mind was absorbed in Krishna, Krishnatmanam. So here we find that this is another extreme, that a person is in the intimate association of the beautiful women, but one is not stimulated by passion, because these inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka, they were absorbed in Krishna. So we can see the two extremes of absorption: absorption in materialism and absorption in Krishna. And most of the practicing devotees, they are neither in this side nor on that side actually. So our situation is something in between. But how do we actually go from our present situation, where we are in between, to the higher progress? So for that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions an important verse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a guideline that sadhana kale e paryanta hridaya kama ache se paryanta varnashramadi dharmera apeksha take. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that at the time of practicing sadhana bhakti, so long as there is material desire within the heart, one should remain within the confines of the varnashram system. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning this point that because we are neither here nor over there, so one is that we have to understand where we are and we have to understand what is the goal and we have to understand what is the path to reach that goal. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that one should practice sadhana bhakti, but one should remain within the confines of the varnashram system as long as there is a material desire within the heart. So this is the guideline which is given. And like talking about like enjoyment within the Krishna consciousness, there is another important verse which talks about the personality of Swayambhuva Manu. When Maitreya Rishi describes about Swayambhuva Manu, he says that Nishnatam Yoga Mayasu Munim Swayambhuvam Manum Yad Abram Shaitam Boga Na Shekur Bhagavat Param. He says Swayambhuva Manu, although he was absorbed in material happiness, Nishnatam Yoga Mayasu, although absorbed in material happiness, but he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, because he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. So that means we find that, that even when a person is a devotee, a person can enjoy material happiness, but within the boundaries of dharma, in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. In fact, that is what Krishna explains in the Gita itself. Saha yagya praja srishtva puro vacha prajapati anena prasavishyadvam yesha voshtrishta kamaduk. You, the beginning of the creation, the Lord sent for the system of sacrifice. And then he said that you perform these sacrifices, by that you will attain prosperity in this world and liberation in the next world. And this was perfectly exemplified by Swayambhuva Manu. And that is why when Dhruva Maharaj was very much disturbed after hearing those harsh words of his stepmother, that time Suniti advises Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Lord, and Suniti gives the example of Swayambhuva Manu. And she says that tata manurvo bhagavan pitamaho the yameka matya puru dakshinair makai ishtvabhi pede duravapa manyato baumam sukam divyam atapavargyam. That your grandfather Swayambhuva Manu executed great sacrifices with unflinching faith and devotion, and he satisfied the Supreme Lord and he achieved prosperity in this world and liberation in the next world. So that is what the Vedic literatures, they describe the path of living in this world and they describe the path of leaving this world. Where Prabhupada writes profound purports in these verses, he says that, he gives a definition of success. He says the secret of success is measured by one's material happiness in this life and liberation in the next life. And such success can be achieved by the grace of the Lord. So generally, yeah, some people become too much otherworldly. They, all the time their question is about going back to God. Or some people become too much this worldly. But we find here that the Vedas give the path of living in this world and also leaving this world. In fact, that the purport of the Swayambhuva Manu, Prabhupada says that the Krishna consciousness can give the people in general the best opportunity to realize the human form of life in the midst of material enjoyment. Krishna consciousness does not stop them in their propensity for material enjoyment, but simply regulates their habits in the life of sense enjoyment. So, we find that this example of Swayambhu Manu, that is why Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, that when a person follows the system of Varnashram, then even this particular world will itself turn out to be, when a person follows the system of Varnashram and practices sadhana bhakti, then this world itself will turn into a Vaikuntha, and there's no need to be transferred to the Vaikuntha planet, like that he mentions in one purport in Nectar of Devotion. So, essentially, we find that in this section what we discussed was that when we follow the program given by the Lord, that there is a facility to satisfy one's material desires within the principles of Dharma, within the confines of Dharma. And when we follow the system of Dharma, it should be under the dominion of sadhana bhakti. Keeping that as the primary goal. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that as long as a person has material desires, one should practice sadhana bhakti, it should be within the confines of the Varnashram system. And then, the next part which I want to discuss is that, like in the previous verse, Krishna mentioned that although all the bodies are made up of essentially the material elements, but the Vedic literatures give different designations to these material bodies, according to the Varnashram system. And we find that when people get attached to these designations and when they forget the higher purpose of the Varnashram system, then a person can become proud or a person can become unregulated in his enjoyment, or one may offend others, one may become arrogant. So let us see some examples in the Bhagavatam. If we see the example of, we'll see some examples in regards to actually interaction between the Brahmana and Kshatriya. And let us see that how in different cases, how some people acted arrogantly because of being absorbed in those identities according to this bodily designation. So, the first example of Sringi and Parikshit Maharaj. In this example, when Sringi came to know that Parikshit Maharaj put the dead snake on the neck of his father, Samik Rishi, Sringi starts saying that, just look at the sins of the rulers, and these rulers are like the crows and watchdogs at the door, and they perpetrate the sins against their masters, contrary to the principles governing servants. So, we Brahmanas are like the masters of the Kshatriyas, and these Kshatriyas, they are like the watchdogs who are supposed to protect the Brahmanas, but they have committed sin against their master. And then he says that, so these Kshatriyas, they are like the watchdogs. How can they hope to dine with their master? How can they actually claim to dine with the master on the same plate? So in this way, Sringi was speaking with a great arrogance towards Parikshit Maharaj. And then he says that actually, because Krishna has disappeared from this planet, so Krishna, when Krishna established Dharma, and after the disappearance of Krishna, many upstarts have flourished because Krishna has disappeared. Therefore, in the absence of Krishna, let me take the role of Krishna and let me punish those upstarts. So therefore, I am going to pronounce this curse upon Parikshit. Just witness my power. And then Sringi pronounces the curse upon Parikshit that he will die within 7 days by the bite of Takshaka. So here, Sringi, he was actually, here is a case where the Brahmana has become arrogant. On the other hand, when Parikshit Maharaj comes to know, Parikshit Maharaj, he accepts that curse of Sringi to be the, he says that Dvija Shapa Rupo, that Krishna has come in the form of this curse. And in fact, Parikshit Maharaj, he takes shelter of the very Brahmanas. So generally, when somebody does a harm to you, or when you become angry with somebody, you try to generalize that you become angry with the entire community to whom that person belongs. But here Parikshit Maharaj, although he was cursed by an immature Brahmana, but he takes shelter of the Brahminical community, and then he hears, he glorifies all the sages and hears Srimad Bhagavatam from the Sukadeva Goswami. In fact, right from the first canto, even in the first canto, he says that actually you sages are, you would not come to associate with the king so intimately. You would keep the kings at a far distant place, just like a people would, during the Vedic culture, they would pass stool at a very distant place from the house. Similarly, you would actually keep the royalty at a distant place. You would not associate with them. But today you have come to me, you have come to give your association to me because I am connected with the Pandavas. And even in the 10th canto, he says that actually I am a Kshatra Bandhu. I am a fallen Kshatriya. But I consider myself to be fortunate because I am getting an opportunity to hear from you. So here is an example where the Brahmana became arrogant, but the Kshatriya, Parikshit Maharaj, he is exhibiting his Vaishnava quality of humility and taking shelter of the Lord. And another example from the Bhagavatam, we see the example of the story of Vena and the Brahmanas. So Vena was the son of the king Anga Maharaj, and after the disappearance of Anga Maharaj, Vena was appointed as the king by the Brahmanas. But this Vena became so cruel that he actually stopped all the pious activities in the kingdom. He stopped all the sacrifices, all the charity, and he told everyone to actually worship him. And the Brahmanas, they became very concerned, and they became so angry, but they controlled their anger. They felt that first we should have a dialogue with Vena. They actually controlled their anger. They first had a dialogue with Vena, and they speak some 10 verses reminding about the duties of the king. Like how, what are the responsibilities of the king, how the king is supposed to actually establish dharma on behalf of the Supreme Lord. And then when Vena actually hears these verses, and then Vena replies that avajananti ami mooda nriparupina meeshwaram nanu vindanti te badram ihaloke paratracha. He says that those who out of gross ignorance do not worship the king, who is actually the Supreme Lord, they experience happiness neither in this world nor the world after death. Like this is a verse exactly opposite to avajananti ma mooda manushim tanumashritam. Krishna says that those who consider me to be an ordinary, they are moodas. But here Vena is telling the exactly opposite. Those who consider the king to be ordinary out because of gross ignorance, and those who do not worship the king, who is actually the Supreme Lord, they neither attain happiness in this world nor in the next world. And then Vena says that you are actually so much devoted to the devatas. Actually, your affection for the devatas is like the affection of an unchaste woman who neglects her married husband and gives attention to the paramour. So just like Krishna chastises the devata worshippers who consider the devata to be independently supreme. So here, like Vena is speaking exactly opposite verse, that you must by leaving me, you want to worship some other devatas. You are all actually unchaste women. And then he says that, don't you know that all the devatas, including Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Vayu, they all actually reside in the body of the king? Yeah, the scriptures mentioned that because king is supposed to be a representative of all the devatas. And therefore, because all the devatas reside in the body of the king, all the devatas are parts and parcels of the king. And essentially he says that by serving me, by worshipping me, all the devatas will be satisfied. So he is speaking exactly the opposite words of Yata Taror Mula Nishechinena. And then, like by serving the watering the root of the tree, all the devatas are satisfied. And then Vena continues that, therefore you should abandon your envy of me and you should worship me and offer me all paraphernalia, and there is no personality superior to me. So he speaks exactly opposite to what Krishna says, Matta parataram nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya. There is nobody superior to me. Similarly, Vena is saying here. So here we find that Vena is a Kshatriya who is speaking to the Brahmanas out of great arrogance. And what was the response of the Brahmanas? And the Brahmanas, as a last resort, they chant the mantras and kill King Vena. In one sense, their response was similar to Sringi. Sringi also, like, he pronounced a curse to kill Parikshit Maharaj. But here the Brahmanas, they killed King Vena as a last resort out of compassion towards the citizens and in order to rectify the situation. It was not out of arrogance. And the Brahmanas, although it is not their normal nature to commit violence, they resorted to violence because it was an emergency situation. And they killed Vena by chanting the mantras. So in these two examples we see, in one example the Kshatriya became arrogant and another example the Brahmanas became arrogant. And then let us see the third example, that where both the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, both they became arrogant. So again, in the story of Ayati Maharaj, the story starts with a quarrel between Devayani and Sarmishta. So Devayani is the daughter of Shukracharya, a Brahmana, and Sharmishta is the daughter of Vrishaparva, a Kshatriya. And they were all taking bath along with their different friends, and they had kept their cloths in the bank of the river. So they went to take bath, and Sharmishta, by mistake, she wore the cloths of Devayani. And then when Devayani came to know, she became so angry. Here, Devayani is the daughter of a Brahmana. So, she says that, so disregarding all etiquette, so this Sarmishta has put on my dress, just like a dog snatches clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. And then she says that, like, we are among the qualified Brahmanas who are accepted as the face of the Supreme Lord. And the Brahmanas have created this world by their austerity, and they always keep the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. And they have directed the path of good fortune, and they are the only worshipable objects within this world. And they are offered prayers and worshipped even by the devatas. And then she says that, moreover, that we belong to the dynasty of the Brahmanas from Bhrigu dynasty. But still, this lady, Sarmishta, she has put on my dress exactly like a Shudra taking charge of Vedic knowledge. So here, Devayani, although in one sense she is speaking the Shastric verses which talk about the qualities of the Brahmanas, but she is speaking out of arrogance. And Sarmishta, in her reply, she says that, you beggar, you don't understand your position. Why do you unnecessarily talk so much? You Brahmanas, you actually beg at the house of the Kshatriyas. So you are like the crows who depend for food on others. So here Sharmishta also, she also became arrogant. And then that's why there was a quarrel. So we find in all these cases, in the case of Sringi or in the case of Vena, and in the case of Devayani and Sarmishta, in one sense, they spoke certain Shastric verses, But they spoke out of arrogance. And that is the power of false ego. The power of false ego is that, like, the Shastra is supposed to purify our false ego, but the false ego is so powerful that one can actually use the Shastra to justify one's false ego. So here, Devayani was actually justifying based on the Shastric verses which talk about the Brahmanas. The same thing Vena was doing, same thing Shringi was doing. And finally, we come to this example of what is the proper interaction between the different Varnas, between the especially here in the example of between the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, we see the example of Kardama Muni and Swayambhu Manu. You can read in the third canto, which says that Kardama Muni, when he meets Swayambhu Manu, he tells Swayambhu Manu that if you Kshatriyas, if you do not perform your duty of protecting the people, of establishing dharma, we will not be able to practice our dharma. And normally a brahmana did not offer obeisances to the kshatriya, but Kardama Muni, he sees Swayambhu Manu as a representative of the Lord, so therefore he offers obeisances to him. And he says that in your body all the devatas reside because you carry out the responsibilities of the devatas and you ensure that you kill all the adharmic forces and you facilitate the practice of dharma. And in this way, Kardama Muni is genuinely actually appreciating Swayambhu Manu. And Swayambhu Manu, in response, he speaks so profoundly. You can go through the verses. I'll just tell in short that Swayambhu Manu says that Brahmanas are the face of the Lord and Kshatriyas are the arms of the Lord. And Kshatriyas are supposed to protect the Brahmanas. And he says, in two verses, he uses the word Dishtya 4 times. He mentions that, by good fortune, I have actually obtained your association. By good fortune, I have got an opportunity to hear from you. And by good fortune, I have actually obtained the dust of your lotus feet. And by good fortune, I am able to see you. So in this way, Swayambhu Muni is showing his genuine appreciation for Kardama Muni. And then he says that actually, I am very grateful to you for reminding me by giving these instructions. Actually, Kardama Muni glorified Swayambhu Muni, but Swayambhu Muni says that, I am grateful to you for reminding me by actually giving these instructions. And so we find that when the people in the different Varnas, when they realize the interdependence, then they can actually genuinely respect each other. And also when they see everyone as a part and parcel of Krishna, then also they can respect each other. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavihastini. So therefore, that once there are five life years in the body. Actually, in one sense, there is only 1 year prana, but it is divided into 5. Prana, apana, vyana, samana, udana. So they actually asked a question to Brahma. So there was a competition between them. So they asked that, like, who is actually superior among us? So Brahma said that, actually, my decision is that all of you are equally great. None of you is greater than the others. Moreover, the greatness of each of you depends upon the support received from others. So, therefore, each of you is great in your own sphere. And the greatness of each depends on the support received from others. So, therefore, we find that when a person feels exclusively superior to others, that is because of arrogance caused by thick ignorance. Just like in the case of Shringi feeling himself to be superior to Parishad, or Vena considering superior himself to the Brahmanas. And another extreme is that complete dependence on others, that is slavery, that is also caused by ignorance of one's identity. But interdependence That is the natural way of living. When we recognize that interdependence, one can actually respect, one can respect others. Whether it is a Brahmana's contribution, Kshatriya's contribution, or Vaishya, or Shudra, or different people, one can genuinely respect others. And therefore, to conclude, Prabhupada mentioned that if you have to maintain this movement successfully, you have to follow the principle of unity in diversity. And when we talk about unity in diversity, unity is facilitated by the Bhagavad Dharma, Samsiddhir Haritoshanam, and diversity is facilitated by Varnashram Dharma, which facilitates that, which recognizes that how everyone is actually different. So the combination of Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashram Dharma, that is what will maintain the society. And that is why Prabhupada mentioned that 50% of my movement is to actually establish Varnashram Dharma. 50% is a small number, it's not a small number. So therefore, Bhagavad Dharma, Varnashram Dharma, without Bhagavad Dharma, it lacks the substance. And it lacks the purpose of life. And Bhagavad Dharma without the Varnashram Dharma, it will not have a stability and it will not create a legacy. So the combination of Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashram Dharma, that is what we find Prabhupada mentioned, the principle of unity in diversity. So with this I would like to conclude. So to summarize, what we discussed was that we discussed about how the Vedas are like the mother. They understand the capacity of the living entities accordingly, provide different rules and guidelines. And then we discussed about the example of Hiranyakashipu and Yayati Maharaj, and how both were dissatisfied by engaging sense gratification with an adharmic way or dharmic way. But at least Yayati Maharaj, ultimately he came to the philosophical side, but Hiranyakashipu did not realize even he was dissatisfied. And then we discussed the example of the asuras who are absorbed in materialism, even in the absence of sense gratification, they were absorbed. They were talking about the twilight and thinking it to be a woman. And we discussed about the residents of Vaikuntha who were absorbed in Krishna. And then we discussed how the Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives guidelines one should practice sadhana bhakti within the confines of Varnashram in order to progress towards the higher level. And then we discussed the four examples and the interaction between the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. So with that, I'll conclude here. Tantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Today's breakfast prasad is sponsored by Mr. Sandesh Shetty in loving memory of his wife, Srimati Salma Shetty. Requesting all the devotees to pray for spiritual well-being of the departed soul. Let us raise